Recording, Ms. Renhard?
We are live.
Okay. All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Fred Wilson. I'll be the hearings officer for today's public hearing. This is the time set aside for the public hearing in the Salmon Valley Water Company conditional use application case. The file number is Z0291-20-C. Before I launch into the normal things I do before every hearing, Mr. Glasgow is going to explain how this works on the Zoom platform. He has a some printed up comments that he goes through.
All right, thanks. Give me about a minute here. Just be patient. I have to say this stuff. So, Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic, so this public hearing will be conducted virtually using the Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearing. My boss is trying to contact me. Hang on one sec. I'm sorry. Panelists for today's hearing, which includes the hearings officer, county staff, the applicant, both have audio and video capability, you know, sort of. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator, that's Darcy. Audience members' video will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the county website later today. It may actually be early next week. There is a designated time during the hearing when it will be open for testimony. Hearings officer will make it clear when that is. If you want to provide testimony, you will utilize the raise hand feature. In this case, we've got such a small group, this, you know, isn't really necessary. But when the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a little while. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it's time for you to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address when you begin. Once you have provided your testimony, your mic will then be muted and your screen will be returned to normal. If you prefer not to testify during the hearing or if you have additional testimony to add, the record will be left open to all parties to submit written testimony for a minimum of 7 days following today's hearing. This will be followed by an additional period for response to testimony and, unless waived, the final period for the applicant to submit their legal argument. These second two time frames here are flexible. That first one, since we've gone to Zoom, we just automatically leave the record open for at least a week after the public hearing is closed, just to make sure everybody who wants to participate can. Email written testimony to me, and I'm going to put up a slide here in a minute with my email address. It is clayg@clackamas.us, but I'm going to have a slide up here in a minute. Or you can mail it to us. Clackamas County Planning and Zoning Division, 150 Beaver Creek Road, Oregon City, Oregon, 97045. And that email address and the physical planning department address is also available on the webpage where you found the Zoom link for today's hearing. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer's written decision. If you do not wish to testify but would like to receive the decision, you must provide your email or standard mailing address, etc. I think that's it, Mr. Wilson.
Okay, thank you. There are a few things I just have to talk about before every public hearing. It's required by the code and by state statute, so I'll try to get through them as quickly as possible since we have fewer people today. But today's your opportunity to submit testimony and evidence, make legal arguments. I don't make a final decision today. There'll be a written decision that comes out after the record's been closed. I need to disclose that I've had any ex parte contacts, that's any discussions about the merits of the case before today, and I haven't. The only thing I know about this case is what I've received from the planning department that's in the planning file and in the staff report. I need to disclose whether I'm biased, whether I'm for or against the application for any reason other than the merits of the case, and I'm not. I'm not familiar with the parties or the property. I don't have any reason to feel one way or the other. I need to disclose that I have any conflicts of interest. I don't. I'm in private practice in Salem. I don't have any clients in Clackamas County, let alone anywhere near the subject property. I don't own property in Clackamas County or have family that owns property in Clackamas County. So if you do testify, even though we know who both of you are, when you testify, just please give us your name and address so that's on the record. Please direct your testimony to the approval criteria. They're listed in the staff reports, primarily section 1203 of the code. Make sure to raise any and all issues you have. If you don't raise those issues, you may be precluded under state law from raising them in the future if there are any further proceedings or appeals of this case. And also for the applicant, there are some proposed conditions of approval. If you have any concerns about them, think they may be unconstitutional takings or anything like that, make sure you raise those issues, or under state law, you may be precluded from raising them in the future as well. I think with that, we can, well, the way it works is we'll start with the staff report from Mr. Glasgow. After that, the applicant, you'll have your opportunity to present your case. I don't think we have anybody else in the audience yet, but if anybody shows up who wants to testify in favor, then they would testify. If anybody shows up who wants to testify in opposition to the application, then they would go. If that happens, Mr. Glasgow would have a chance to respond to anything that comes up. And finally, the applicant, you'd have a chance for final rebuttal since you have the burden of proof. With that, I think we can turn to the staff report.
Okay. You know, just for the record, there are five of us here this morning, planning staff, hearings officer Fred Wilson, our moderator, Darcy Renhardt. We have the applicant represented by Sarah Hartung and Robert Peacock. There's no one else present. That being the case, and I'm assuming everybody's had a chance to look at the staff report since you are the applicants, the hearings officer has received it. I'm going to be brief. I do still need to go through a little bit of a spiel here just to create a record, so bear with me. And if you have any questions when I get done, certainly just pipe up. Let me see if I can find what I'm looking for. All right, I'm assuming everybody can see this little PowerPoint I did up.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So we got Salmon Valley Water Company. This is a conditional use application. It's a proposal to connect to an existing well, Foxglove 7, I think it's called, to include that in their supply system to be used in their distribution system. As proposed, it's in two phases. The applicant is going to tell us a lot more about this, but just briefly, phase one involves pump house and transmission line, and phase two, construction of the water treatment building itself. A little background, this is the old Rippling River Golf Course. It's gone through a couple of other names. The golf course itself has been there for decades. It's just a great place to golf. And this particular location, this property is the golf course, and the location is within a portion of the golf course off to the side of one of the fairways, and we're going to get into that in a minute. It's currently called Three Nines. It's part of a resort area called Welch's Whammy. This is the Welch's portion. The site is on the way up to Mount Hood, going up Highway 26, and the higher you get, the wetter it gets. It's very green in there. There's water all over the place. The golf course itself is in a generally, it's not level, but it's just gently sloped down to the west. You get into the foothills very quickly as you go south, north, or east of the actual golf course. There's been a small area of wetland identified in the vicinity. This is not covered by WCRAD or HUCA, you know, anything within the urban growth boundaries. So Water Environment Services has been involved with this. The applicant has been working with them, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. The golf course itself is a golf course, so it's big. The area proposed for development here is small, both relative to the golf course and in actuality. The building area, the footprint area, is less than 500 square feet. The disturbance area is, I just generally threw 2,000 square feet in there. The applicant can get into more detail on this. Zone designation, and I'm going to announce that there is a mistake in the staff report, and Sarah tried to tell me. But I wouldn't listen to her. This property is zoned open space, OSM. It's also zoned HR, Hoodland Residential. It is a split zoned property. The golf course itself, the fairways and you know, that sort of thing, is zoned open space management. This particular location, however, has a zone boundary going right through the middle of it, and I'll show you on a map here in a second. So there's two zone designations to apply here. I just noticed it this morning when I was putting together a PowerPoint. The staff report has been changed at several locations to include the correct code reference for zone and findings necessary for both the open space management zone and the Hoodland residential zone. I apologize for that boo-boo. Phew. Okay, I'm going to get over it though. So as far as where this place is, this is Highway 26. This is, Welch's is over here. That little teeny-weeny thing, you see, if we were in the regular conference room, this would be this gigantic display on the wall, and it would look really cool. But I'm going to zoom in a little bit more. This is the community boundary itself. Whammy Welch's is one of our rural communities, Division 16 unincorporated communities. This happens to be our only resort community, which is one of the four designations for the rural communities. It is a resort community. This is a boundary that I'm colorblind, whatever the shaded area is, that's the interior of the resort community. Here's what it looks like from the sky. What I've lit up here is that portion of the golf course, which includes our subject area, which is this notch right in here. Let me get a little bit closer. There it is. Okay, so here's, you know, where I try to go, not off to the sides, but the actual area of development is approximately in here. The zone boundary, let me back out one more. Now, the zone boundary follows right through here. So everything left of that cursor is Hoodland Residential. This strip in the middle is open space management. The area proposed for development is in a split zoned area. So both zones apply. As far as a site plan, let's see. And we're going to, the applicant's going to be able to hopefully give us something where we can see a little more detail. Again, I'm used to displaying this on a wall. But here's the fairway. Here's that notch out right here. Here's the area of development, two proposed buildings. Again, less than 500 square foot footprint total for the two buildings. As far as building elevations, this is in the middle of a golf course. And what they're trying to do here, obviously, is you know, keep that context in mind when with this building design. It's very simple. Limited fenestration, doesn't even have any windows. I think the goal of the applicant here is to make this thing disappear into the background and not be a distraction on the golf course. As far as applicable code criteria, we've got a couple. You got section 1203. You've also got section 317, which of course is our Hoodland. I'll get that later. Hoodland Residential. You got a variety of 1,000 sections, and that's it. In the staff report, I went through each of the criteria. There's six that are provided in section 1203. And 1203 is sort of the master section here for conditional use. It kind of put its little tentacles out to all the other applicable sections. So the six criteria, the first one, the applicant needs to show, the county needs to find that the use is proposed, is allowed in the underlying zoning district. In this case, there's two zoning districts. So there's two ways we have to look at this. Both zones, the open space management and Hoodland Residential, do allow this type of use as a potential conditional use. So this first criterion is met. Second criterion, number B here, you've got to show that the site itself is suitable for the use, considering size, shape, location, topography, natural features, that sort of thing. This proposal simply needs to go there because of that site. That's where the well is. How's that? That's where the water source is. The property itself, the size, obviously, is not an issue. It's large. The shape is not an issue, as demonstrated through the plot plan, amended plot plan, showing that setbacks can be met. And those setbacks still apply, by the way, the most restrictive setbacks, but I'll get into that in a second. This is not natural, particularly. This is a golf course. It's a highly manicured golf course. The location chosen here does have some trees that through this application will be removed. There will be more vegetation planted to help bury this building from view. Then the third criterion, well, the property itself is suitable, and it's also necessary in this case because of the location of the water source. Third criterion, you've got to show it's consistent with subsection 1007.09. That's our concurrency section regarding capacity. And also, you got to show the safety of the transportation system is adequate to serve the proposed development. This proposal is at a location that already attracts traffic. There'll be no more driveways. There'll be no additional intersections. There'll be no additional traffic because the Salmon Valley Water Company people are out and about doing their regular maintenance anyway. Direct access to this will be on a cart path, golf cart path. Traffic engineering, they submitted comments, brief comments at the pre-application meeting, but had no comments for this staff report because they're just looking at this as no impact. Fourth criterion, you got to show the proposed use will not alter the character of the surrounding area in a manner that limits, impairs, or precludes substantially the use of the surrounding properties for the primary uses allowed in that zoning district or districts in this case. This is a small development, I mean, you know, relative to something bigger, I guess. The two buildings themselves, as I understand it, combined to be less than 500 square feet. Lighting is discussed in the staff report, and as presented by the applicant, it'll be downward directed, shielded. That shouldn't be an issue. Visually, the intent is to hide this to the extent possible with vegetation, just to make it, it's in a golf course. You don't want people to be seeing that out of the corner of their eye. So really the main potential impact on area properties here is sound, noise, whatever's going to be coming out of that building, because there's going to be machinery in there, and I hope we can talk about that, because there is a house quite close to this. And I am, can you hang on just 1 second? I have to plug in my laptop. I'm going to lose connection. All right. Okay, let me back up here. Okay, so then the fourth criterion, you've got to show that it satisfies applicable policies from the comprehensive plan. And this one's a little bit interesting, frankly. It gave me a chance to look up unincorporated communities, which we just did at the last hearing for Colton, which is a different type of community. As I mentioned, this is defined as a resort community through state administrative rule and our comprehensive plan. So there's particular findings necessary for that. Chapter 7 comes into play as this is a public facility and services. Salmon Valley Water Company, I think they've got about 1,000 connections. I'll let the applicant talk about that. But, it serves an area. And so findings were made there. This also gets into Chapter 10, the Mounted Community Plan, which, believe it or not, I was actually involved in that at the beginning before it even was a thing, back when I was a student at Oregon State, back in the early 80s, late 70s. So it gave me a chance to look at that again. I made positive findings against all those. Sixth criterion, you've got to show that it complies with the zoning district and any overlay zoning districts. There's the two zones, Hoodland Residential and Open Space. I made findings about that. There's no 800 sections involved here. I went through the applicable 1,000 sections. There is no particular overlay here, although I hope we can talk about the wetland, because we have Water Environment Services involved with that. The applicant's working with them. We're getting a small area of wetland very close to this property. Now, I want to do one other thing here. Give me one more minute, because I want to show, and I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. So never mind. What I'm trying to do is show where that house is. And I may have to have Darcy help me on this, but what I'm trying to do is get a plan map, and I'm not able to find it in all my stuff. And I have a lot of windows open, so I guess I'm not going to be able to do it. Darcy, is there any way you can get a plan map? I'm feeling a little bit, because it's showing on my screen. There's Zoom, there's hearings, there's that. Problem is I have so many boxes open, I can't.
How about on your previous slide where you showed the plan view?
Yeah, oh, here it is. Okay, so I've got it. No, I want to be able to zoom in on it. Okay, can everybody see this? I'm assuming we're all looking at the same thing, right?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So, and bear with me, because this is not meant for this. Here's a little notch right here, and I'm going to try to zoom in on that without losing it, which, of course, is beyond my abilities. But all right. What I put on here, that's the zone boundary right there, that brown line. I can get rid of that aerial one more time. This is open space management. This is Hoodland Residential. The zone boundary just clips this little lip that comes off right here. It's frankly kind of odd. If I take it off, that's what it looks like. So there's a zone boundary. Then over here, And all your little heads are in the way over here, so hang on one second. I want to show where that house is. Because this is really probably the, I mean, this is a straightforward application. I'm all for it, recommend approval, that's fine. The only potential conflicts I see is this house. And this is approximately where the area of development is. And, they are going to take out a couple of trees, but I guess if I have a concern for this neighbor here, this is going to be a new source of noise. And I'm just curious what that noise is like. And we'll be able to talk about that. And then there's the area of wetland that the applicant's going to talk about. And I think with that, because I'm definitely babbling now, I'm going to stop and let anybody has any questions, and I'll be here throughout anyway.
Okay. Thank you. No, I don't have any questions. So we can turn it over to the applicant.
So sorry, there was some breakup there. Are we ready to give a little short version of it?
Sure. Can you guys hear me okay? I was having a little trouble with Mr. Glasgow there, but
yes. I'm coming through. All right, I'll start, Sarah.
Robert, just before you start, we are kind of blinking in and out here for some reason. So we seem to be coming back every time, but I'm having the same issue. But anyway.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hopefully things are better now that you're not surfing the web GIS, pulling a lot of bandwidth. So I guess I can address some of the questions, give a quick summary of this project and address some of the items that you mentioned you wanted to have us talk about. You were right. We're about Salmon Valley Water Company serves about 955 connections in the Welch's area, including the resort. A lot of the area is, of course, vacation homes, but otherwise residential outside the resort and a few commercial businesses there. This well will, I can bring a little map up in just one second. Share my screen. So this is kind of the area around our project. So this FG7 represents the well. You can see the little notch that Clay was talking about, where our building site is. So the Salmon Valley Water Company serves the community here with drinking water using right now three wells. The largest one is this Rutledge well. It has a high iron and manganese concentration, so they supplement it with two smaller wells that are just located on the north side of Highway 26, between the Highway 26 and the Sandy River. Those wells are high quality water. It's good drinking water. So what they typically do is they mix the high iron and manganese water with the other two wells, and creates a good quality water for most of the year. During the summer, June, July, I think it's July, August, and September, their license to pump, or their water right from the wells near the Sandy River, limit them or prevent them from pumping from those two wells. So during the summer, they have really primarily this Rutledge well to work with for water supply. And, as it would happen, period is during the period of highest demand, because you've got a lot of people coming in vacationing in the summer. It's a fun place to be in the summer, and people out playing golf and so on. So the golf course does not use their water for irrigation. They have their own supply. So this well, Foxglove 7, was drilled a couple of years ago, and then last year it was improved to increase its production. So it has better quality water than the Rutledge well. It still may require treatment. That's why we have included our phase two treatment building. They've collected samples when they developed the well, and it does look like we're going to require some treatment. But the plan was to build the well building, the pump, install the pump in the well, have our controls on site, and then connect to the existing distribution system so they could start to provide water, start pumping, sample the water in that well and see how it progresses. What sometimes happens is the character of the water changes after you pump on it for a few months. But as I said, we're expecting that we're going to have to treat. So as we watch the characteristics of that water, we're going to be planning our next phase for the treatment building. Let's see. There was the question of noise. So under normal operation, when PGE power is available, the well pump is going to be about 180 feet down in the well. That's our only major motorized piece of equipment. It'll be operated using a variable frequency drive, which is inside the well building. We've got some control panels and things like that inside the well building, but I don't anticipate any noise at all from the building during normal operation. The building will come equipped with a plug and a manual transfer switch to connect a generator so that if there's an extended power loss, the water company can bring in a trailer mounted generator and they'll connect it to the manual transfer switch, flip the switch, and they will run off generator power. So under emergencies, circumstances, extended power outage, they will be running a diesel generator. I would say 8 hours a day. That's kind of the time frame that they would operate it. Because it's a water system and they have a reservoir, they don't need to pump 24 hours a day unless they have an extreme demand. And in this setting, we're most likely to see a power loss during winter weather. Other potential times where we might need it would be after an earthquake. So, but there may be other issues that prevent this well from being used, such as, pipeline failures and things like that around the distribution system. So that will be a see what happens when we get there type of scenario in an earthquake. So I think that's the extent of what I wanted to talk about. Is it worth talking about what we had planned, how we've planned this to fit within the setbacks and including the wetland buffer or the stream buffer?
Yes. Yeah.
I'll let Sarah talk a little bit about the buffer that we discovered, but we made a fairly recent change to the building location. We moved it maybe 2 feet so that we could move it out of the buffer that we had recently discovered. Can you talk about what that buffer is, Sarah? And you just muted yourself.
I can, yep. I was trying to find a snapshot of how the buildings got shifted. Maybe I can... Oh, I can't share. I can just explain it.
I can. I need to unshare. That's what I need to do.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There you go.
Only one person can share. Let's see. Yep. I found it in an email, so hopefully it's... Can you guys see? Maybe it's a little small, but can you guys see these components of the site plan?
Yeah.
So here's these little white boxes. That's the proposed pump house and then the water treatment building. And so we had coordinated with Steve Hanschke at WES about adjacent natural features. So there's this little perennial stream. You can see the dark blue line is ordinary high water line. And then this dashed line is top of bank. And so it's this just a small unnamed stream that is dammed to provide a water feature in the golf course. So that's what the wetland is. And it's pretty well defined. It's got, topographically has very distinct topographic break that defines the boundary. And so WES considers the wetland, I guess, kind of a man-made feature, if you will, or altered, that is exempt from buffer requirements, but the stream is not. And the buffer, the 50-foot buffer is required from top of bank. So we use the topo to determine that and, you know, mapped the stream in the field using GPS. So what this is showing is the original placement of that pump house was going to be within that 50-foot buffer and would have required a variance, but the components were shifted to the south to avoid the stream buffer, but also maintain, I mean, you can't really see the scale here, but maintain a 10-foot minimum setback from that nearby residence. So that's the current status. The we updated the plan sheet and presented that to Clay and Steve early August to, you know, thread the needle, avoid the buffer, but also maintain minimum standard setbacks.
Okay. Do you guys have any problems with any of the proposed conditions of approval?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Can you can we just run by them again? I mean, I think they're pretty standard.
Okay. Can you, Sarah? Can
and
you share?
Stop sharing. Yep. Okay.
There you go. Just so I can throw it up there real fast and see if I can find that. All right. So as far as I know, these are all pretty standard conditions. Let me just zip through them here really quick.
Yeah, it's a lot less than we normally have.
Yeah. That's because traffic engineering didn't submit anything. So we got boilerplate. You need to work with Wendy Coriel. She's with the engineering division. She levies transportation systems development charges. I think she submitted comments to you at pre-app, hopefully. And there's a typo right there. Okay, I got that. Waste, not the right wastewater. This gives, since it's a public, typically a conditional use is valid for 4 years. This is an infrastructure project. It's a public utility. So you get 10 years to actually commence the use, and commencement is defined here. As far as conditions for me, very standard. You need to get any necessary building permits, electrical, plumbing, that kind of stuff. Lighting plan has, this is a standard condition also. It's already met. You're working with Steve Hanchka. Steve Hanchka actually works with me in planning, but he implements the Water Environment Services buffers in this case. There's conditions for, just kind of repeated conditions for building permits. These are really, really straightforward, simple, you know, what you'd expect type conditions. I don't see anything in there weird. Yeah.
So I have a question just to tie up the conclusion on the stream buffering. Do we need to get something in writing from Steve? You know, because I coordinated over email and he just indicated, you know, if you're not within the 50-foot setback, you don't need a variance, and then the wetland is exempt. You know, does that need to get submitted to the record?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, in order to satisfy that, let me go back to my screen. Let me go back to this. And in order to satisfy this one, oh, shoot. Wrong one. Sorry. Hang on. You get it again. Staff report. Here it is. Okay. Staff recommendation. I want, because I can't remember how that's worded all of a sudden. Applicant to work with planning staff regarding the identity and satisfy any requirements thereof. Frankly, I don't like the way that's worded because it is unclear. So I'll reword it before I send this to the hearings officer just to say, you know, and shall submit evidence to show satisfaction of those buffers. And that can be in the form of just, you know, forwarding me a copy of whatever Steve says when he gives you the thumbs up, because this is kind of morphed throughout, you know, at the wetland, and it wasn't really the wetland, it's the creek, and the buffer requirements have been changed because of that, and it seems much simpler now. So I think you can satisfy this just by forwarding me something from Steve saying that the buffers are met.
Okay, so thank you.
Yes is a short answer.
Okay.
Okay. Is there anything else anybody wanted to add before we wrap up? Looks good. And so the way Mr. Glasgow explained it is we're leaving all records open. I think if we'd done this in person, we probably would just close the record right now. But the way we're doing it with the Zoom stuff is just in case people didn't get a chance, who wanted to get a chance. It seems unlikely here, but just in case, gives them an opportunity to submit something. So I've got a little spiel for how this works. So what we'll do is we'll close the public hearing. So there'll be end of actual testifying in public. But the record is left open 1 week from today for any participant to submit additional written evidence, argument, or testimony. The record is left open an additional 1 week after that for any participant to respond to new evidence submitted during the first open record period. And finally, the record is open an additional 1 week after that for the applicant to submit final written argument in support of the application. The applicant's final submittal shall not include any new evidence. All submittals must be received by the Clackamas County Planning and Zoning Division by 4 p.m. on the day the applicable open record period closes. I don't think the applicant has any reason to submit anything. Everything looks to be in order. If nobody submits anything during that first open record period, you probably won't want to respond to anything. So if you let Mr. Glasgow know that you're going to waive your final legal argument, that can move the clock up 1 week on all this, and I can get this out pretty much that day. So
we'll just wait 1 week from today.
Hmm?
We'll wait 1 week from today to let you know that we will waive our final comment or response, I guess.
Right. I think I'd still need to wait. The soonest I could get this out, assuming nobody submits anything, you guys waive your final legal argument, I could have it out in 2 weeks from today. I don't think they can mail things out on Thursday, but I could probably have it done, and Mr. Glasgow could at least let you know it was approved.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think with that, as we said, we've closed the public hearing. The record is left open for those periods, and that will – Mr. Glasgow is going to send me the latest and greatest staff report on this. And then with that, that can conclude today's proceedings. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. I guess we're all free to leave.
All right.
All right, then.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Thank you.